Hello, everybody. Welcome to Peck Report, where we give you news, but it's timeless news. We give you timeless news. We only deal in current events when it's something that speaks to a larger picture. Something that you could share with somebody years and years from now, and it'll still be relevant. Case in point, did you know that C.S. Lewis actually predicted a very eerie prophecy involving what we would call today as transhumanism? If you haven't had a chance to do so, make sure you subscribe. Click the little bell to tell YouTube that you want to be notified every time I post a video, every time a video gets posted here on Josh Peck Disclosure. If you are listening to the podcast, great to have you. If you want to watch the videos, go to youtube.com/Josh Peck Disclosure. Of course, the best place to go, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure, is joshpeckdisclosure.com. Here we try to disclose the world to the rest of you to the best of our ability, and that's what we do. So let's get started. C.S. Lewis, you're probably familiar with him. Did you know that he actually predicted the future? And this one is in a weird, obscure way. It's not something obvious. It's not something like Screwtape Letters where, you know, evil stuff is going to happen. There is a spiritual war going on. But more specifically, the scourge of transhumanism. C.S. Lewis actually predicted this well before it could ever be known what level of scientific advancement human beings would achieve in the near future. C.S. Lewis was alive not that long ago in terms of human civilization. So, the promise of transhumanists is that we will all be immortal, not in heaven or in the resurrection of life, of the new creation, but on this earth in these bodies. That is the promise of transhumanism. At least, if you've never heard of it, transhumanism is a movement that seeks to lift humans to an entirely new stage of development through things like cryonics, space travel, life extension therapies, human modification technologies, gene editing, biohacking, that sort of thing. Now, in a letter to the editor of the January edition of First Things, the transhumanist Steve Fuller outlines two sides of the movement. In the quest for immortality, the transhumanists would have us either, quote, live in the biological bodies of our birth indefinitely, either by reversing the aging process, or, per cryonics, resurrecting the dead, end quote, or have us, quote, migrate from a carbon to a silicon base such that we merge with artificial intelligence, perhaps culminating in the singularity, end quote. Now, to many of you out there, that probably sounds ridiculous. But Steve Fuller is not some crazy guy who lives in his basement just watching sci-fi movies. He's actually a professor of sociology in England at the University of Warwick. Now, this is where C.S. Lewis comes in. If you've ever read the book, That Hideous Strength, it is the third novel in his space trilogy. Phenomenal space fiction, science fiction from quite a while ago. I personally enjoy old science fiction because I always thought it was interesting to see what people, say, 100 years ago thought our time would be like today. I find that really interesting. But the book is called That Hideous Strength, again, the third novel in a space trilogy. But in that book, a group of genteel English professors create a national institute for coordinated experiments, or the NICE, N-I-C-E, National Institute for Coordinated Experiments. When explaining the NICE to protagonist Mark Studdock, Lord Feverstone prophesies, this is a direct quote, quote, it does really look as if we now had the power to dig ourselves in as a species for a pretty staggering period to take control of our own destiny. If science is really given a free hand, it can now take over the human race and recondition it. Make man a really efficient animal. If it doesn't, well, we're done, end quote. The NICE's goals sound similar to those of the transhumanists. Recondition, make efficient, control. Now, granted, futurist thinkers in Lewis's day were already laying the foundation for modern transhumanists and transhumanism as a movement, but back then they didn't have anything like the technology available now to those who want to reprogram humanity. So things do not end well for the NICE. Their quest for power seems well-intentioned. You know, progress is good, right? But they elevate that quest above any moral constraint. The NICE doesn't hesitate to kidnap and imprison Studok when he tries to desert. And the Institute even provokes a riot in order to declare martial law over the nearby town enforced by their private police. They're a deeply disturbing bunch, but at least they're fictional. And the real transhumanists, like Steve Fuller, wouldn't endorse kidnapping fellow professors or provoking a riot in Coventry, at least not yet. At least not yet. But people worry about professors from England and others wanting to enhance human development for the same reasons that Lewis was worried, you know, their optimism. And this might sound strange, but why would anyone think optimism is dangerous? You know, don't all activists believe that the world will get better? And after all, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, quote, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice," end quote. If we believe that things will turn out all right in the end, then that should be the goal. But Dr. King's optimism, if you can really call it that, rested on the belief that the world has moral foundations, that God's justice will triumph in the end. And this vision of ultimate divine authority is a world away from the optimism at the foundation of transhumanism today and the NICE in Lewis's book, That Hideous Strength. For transhumanists, longer life for humans, more technology and increased power will certainly end well for the transhumanist. Even Christian so-called transhumanists, like the Silicon Valley icon Peter Thiel, couch the movement in a biblical language, recalling Jesus conquering death. He said, quote, "I think the thing that's really incompatible with life is death," end quote. But the transhumanists don't take into account the reason death exists. And this is especially jarring when listening to Christian transhumanists like Thiel. In Genesis, death isn't a glitch in the operating system that God engineered. Rather, death is the result of Adam and Eve's choice, one to take control of their own destiny, their lack of trust in God's promise of loving care. And when we take control, we compare and compete with each other instead of trusting and loving each other. I mean, after all, the first sin committed after Adam and Eve eat the forbidden fruit is when Cain kills Abel, which we talked about in the last video. This reading of the fall narrative can help us understand Paul's words in Romans 6:23 in a new light. When he says, "For the wages of sin is death," he's not threatening us. You know, Paul's words here convey an anguished realization that we cannot save ourselves. No matter what we do, no matter how advanced our life extension therapies may become. But the problem with transhumanism and with the unfettered quest for technological innovation more generally is identified in Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man, which he called the nonfiction counterpart to That Hideous Strength. He writes, quote, "What we call man's power over nature turns out to be a power exercised by some men over other men with nature as its instrument," end quote. So taking the airplane, flying in a plane, doesn't actually give any of us power over nature. The plane's pilot is the one allowing us to fly in the plane, and thus the pilot has a certain power over the rest of us. Now, that worked out pretty well for most of us, but not so well for millions of humans who have died because other people used planes as weapons in the past. Now, that might sound extreme, but you need only think of another great advance to find another great sin. The mechanized loom was supposed to help humanity conquer the inefficiency of hand weaving, and it did. But it also, as a consequence, during the Industrial Revolution, we built the dark satanic mills of William Blake's imagination. So 200 years later, we still have sweatshops filled with child laborers, laborers all over the world. Technology itself may be inherently amoral. Not immoral, amoral. Not good or bad, it depends what you do with it. But technology is always a tool in the hands of humans who are inherently immoral with an I. That's the whole reason Christians cannot pay attention only to private piety. If we leave society to its own devices, concrete gets used for the foundations of more jails instead of more schools, and GPS gets used for drone strikes instead of pizza deliveries, and the internet gets used to coordinate terrorist attacks instead of coordinating Christmas parties, for example. So Lewis calls us to action, to humility in the face of our quest for power. Just because we can, does not mean we should. Now, even if you're an optimist, transhumanist professor, even if you are a transhumanist professor in England and an optimistic one at that, even if you're one of those, we still must all wake up to this reality that we find ourselves in, that Paul talked about: the wages of sin is death. All right, everybody, if you haven't had a chance to do so, make sure you subscribe. Please click the bell for notifications. Visit joshpeckdisclosure.com. And if you want some Josh Peck merchandise, if you want a t-shirt, if you want to tell people to either believe their eyes or believe the lies, you can get a Great Seal t-shirt, the Great Seal of the United States on our dollar bill. What is that all about? And you can get a shirt that will inspire some serious thought. Okay. All that being said, thank you so much. Please leave a comment in the comment section below. Let's get a conversation going about this stuff. I think it's important, and I hope you do too. Until next time, love you all. Take care, and God bless.